It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here on this Saturday, the Saturday before the opening of rifle season. The Utes.
Yeah.
The Utes season?
No. Utes are going on today.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The Saturday before big rifle season Ute season is going on today.
Now we're talking. You're correct.
Right. Which I normally am.
Yeah, like, them Utes is out there getting them right now, boy.
And they're getting wet as well. So coming up, our buddy Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing is going to join us. Lots to talk about with him. Prepping kills you may make elsewhere, bringing them back into the state. The dangers of CWD, we'll talk about that as well. But first, is it too soon to take a victory lap? For those of us that waited to get our planting done until this last week.
I did mine Wednesday.
Yep. So we got the last stuff finished on Friday. Okay. Thursday, got the majority of it done. And I just looked at the forecast. So we've had the rain so far, but look at this. So I thought it was something wrong with the weather website when I went to it.
Every day.
It shows, not only today, tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and finally breaking on Friday before opening, and then going back to raining again.
Yeah,
it has not rained in forever. Now it's fixing to rain for a week straight.
And that's what happens. This time of year happens all the time. Doesn't rain. Then all of a sudden when it starts, it don't stop.
Yeah, so it's out there. It's in the mix, and rain is part of the forecast. Now, I don't see any big cold wave coming in here, even going into opening weekend of rifle season. But we are getting the rain.
Yeah.
So, those of us that waited, we waited till last minute, but we finally got it.
Well, we're not going to have any green up for opening day of gun season, probably. Very little, if any. Maybe a little bit. But later on, after Thanksgiving, things ought to be looking good.
Yeah, so there you go. Got the rain, and hopefully you've gotten your all your fields planted, or some of your fields planted, to take benefit to this rain we're having now.
And I hope the people that planted earlier, a month or so ago, I hope that their fields come on up.
If they didn't die, they're going to be in a good position now. If they got some roots down and get some rain on them.
That's right.
That's for
sure. Hopefully they don't have to reseed.
No joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's expensive.
So I didn't even get, not even running any fancy mix. There's no buck on the package of the stuff I'm slinging.
Me either.
There's no, big glossy photo of a giant buck. And I'm just thinking.
Oats and wheat.
Yeah. I'm doing a three-way. It ain't cheap.
No, it's not.
And fertilizer, a whole different story, too.
Yeah. Listen, it's getting so expensive to plant. I mean, it's and I hadn't even fertilized. I mean, I put a little bit of fertilizer out.
Oh, yeah,
but I haven't really fertilized. I'm going to wait till about after Thanksgiving, and I'll go back in there and I'll
fertilize,
ammonia nitrate and put a little fertilizer out.
Yep. So, that's a, so those are having to reseed, I'm sorry for you because that stinks.
It's
expensive deal. All right. Also, I want to, here's my pivot. Here's my transition as we're talking about weather.
Yeah.
Okay. And first of all, let's say this show, if you might be hearing it down the road, but this original airing this morning, it is Veterans Day. It is the 11th of November. And thank you to our veterans. Thank you to our active members, active service members out there making it happen for us, giving us this country where we can enjoy worrying about stuff. Think about this. We can start worrying about stuff like whether we have to reseed or not.
That's right.
I mean, when we get into these conversations like, hey, we're reseeding and fertilizers, this, that. Thank you, veterans. Thank you, active service,
they
for giving us a country that we can worry about things like that.
That's right.
So I mean, that's because of them. We can go complain and moan about the price of fertilizer.
We could be in other countries and just worrying about what we're going to eat. That's
right.
And what we're going to drink.
Yeah.
And is that drink going to kill us if we do drink it?
Right.
Yeah. So we are blessed. There's no doubt.
So thank you to our veterans out there, all of y'all on this Veterans Day. And let's go in the time machine here. And I've told this story, I think, before on the show, but it's been a long time. And this year, where, because quite often it's been, what, I don't know how many years it takes for it to cycle back around, you know, the day where Veterans Day falls on a Saturday.
Right.
But on this year, remind me of the great Armistice Day storm of 1940, which is the original name for Veterans Day. Which, by the way, Veterans Day started, the celebration of Veterans Day started in Birmingham, started in Alabama.
Didn't know that.
Is where the roots are. But Armistice Day, which is the progenitor to that, was, you know, we go back, gosh, I would say at the close of World War One is Armistice Day. So there's a little history, but here we go. So this is what happened back in 1940. Okay, Armistice Day of 1940. We are actively in World War II at this point.
Yeah.
This story from Ducks Unlimited's website. You can, if you just Google Armistice Day storm and duck hunters, there's several tellings, but this is a good one here. On Armistice Day, November 11th, 1940, thousands of hunters gathered to hunt ducks on the upper Mississippi River in the Great Plains in the upper Midwest, including Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Okay, so they're up there along the Mississippi where it's not near as big as it is down here, but still big enough and obviously a great place to go
sure.
hunt ducks.
Oxbow lakes and yep. lakes. And
the fall of 1940. So think about the fall we've had. The fall of 19, and this has not happened. We don't have a big cold front coming through. This is 1940. Before somebody says, is it? We haven't. No. This is 1940. The fall of 1940 had been unseasonably warm in many areas along the Father of Waters, Mississippi River. And November 11th, 1940 started with blue skies and a 55-degree temperature. The pleasant weather didn't last long, though. Now everybody's going out to duck hunt.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And back then, we didn't have cell phones to tell us what the weather's going to do.
Correct.
10 minutes from now.
Correct. Right. So these people just go out, they're going duck hunting. So the weather didn't last long, though. To the west, a storm was brewing, a storm that earlier had hit the Pacific Northwest with near hurricane-force gusts. Storms normally weakened as they crossed the Rockies. This storm did not. Instead, it tapped moisture from the Gulf of Mexico and cold air lurking over Canada, and the two combined into an explosive pattern. Skies darkened, winds picked up, and sprinkles of rain began to fall. Around noon, a howling blizzard began making its way across the upper Mississippi, a blizzard that no one would forget. So, folks are out there, and see, duck hunters, you're gonna hear this, and you're going to say, here's the trap, and here's what happened. When the first temperature first began to fall and plummet, they write here, most duck hunters were pleased. You know, we get bad weather.
Ducks getting ready to come in.
Yeah,
here.
That's right.
That's right.
So we love it. Shooting conditions were perfect. Thousands of ducks started funneling into the river valley, and the gunning got better and better. So yeah, duck hunters are like, I'm not leaving this. We got ducks everywhere. What the duck hunters
didn't...
It's
a duck trap.
That's right. Well, it's a hunter's trap, too. What the hunters didn't realize is the ducks were gathering in huge concentrations, seeking shelter from increasingly bad weather. So they're pushing in front of this big storm. Many of the hunters decided to stay until they could take a limit of birds, and there were big limits in those days, so you could shoot a lot of birds. And it said until shooting hours were over at 4 p.m. is when they, I guess, back then, shooting hours were over then. During the excitement of the hunt, the ferocity of the wind and cold air was ignored by the hunters, and when 4 o'clock rolled around, hunters discovered it was too rough to get back to the mainland out of where they were in the Mississippi River. Some tried anyways and managed to make it ashore under their own steam. They stood, white and shaking on solid ground, looked back at the river, running 5-foot waves. Hundreds did not make it back home that night. Hundreds, it said. Freezing, they made their way to high ground when possible and tried to make the best of a terrible situation. Some huddled together for warmth over overturned boats. Others walked around and around to keep from freezing. All of them suffered. Before the night was over, now remember it's 55 when this day started. Before the night was over, the wind chill temperature there along the Mississippi dropped as low as minus 55 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ooh-wee.
Next day.
100 degrees.
Change.
That's, whoo.
So you might have been in just a break. Back then, I mean, they didn't have clothes like we do now, let alone that wouldn't even help you now, but they probably had some wax cotton jackets and a sweater.
Well, you know. 55 degrees, that they even had, probably didn't even have a jacket.
By that night, it went as low as negative 55. The next day, more than 50 duck hunters were found dead by rescuers, their frozen bodies recovered from marshes, lakes, potholes, ponds, and rivers from Ontario to Illinois, from Iowa to Michigan. 50 duck hunters dead from that one storm, and the Great Armistice Day storm found a place in infamy as one of the deadliest winter storms to ever hit this country. So there was obviously the big storm that hit other parts of the, other people, but killed 50 duck hunters in one day.
That's unbelievable. I don't believe I've ever heard the weather change 100 degrees in one day. Have you?
I don't think I have either.
I don't think it has in my lifetime. I don't remember.
No, it's not. Now, I want to be sure, because it was a wind chill. It says wind chill temperature.
Okay.
The wind chill temperature. So it was 55 regular temp, they said, that day, and when the hunters were going out. And by the night, it got as low as wind chill of minus 55.
Okay. Well, that still has to be minus 10, 15, or 20
like that,
or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, Dr. Bill, if you're listening, please let us know what the formula is on that. But, yeah, so they go out. It's 55 degrees.
And blowing, what did you say, 100 miles an hour?
They said this storm at some points had been blowing hurricane-force winds, which is 74. So it said, when it hit the Pacific Northwest with near hurricane-force gusts, so that's 74 miles an hour. And then they said when the temperature started to plummet, most duck hunters were pleased. There it goes. I don't know if it made it to, it said, for the night, it just said the wind chill was as low as negative 55. But we know that the winds were obviously very, very heavy, coming off the fact that earlier that storm had gust up to hurricane force.
Yeah.
So, and you imagine that can make a wind chill something. So, yeah, 50 duck hunters, the Great Armistice Day storm of 1940. And it happened on this day all those years ago.
You know,
so duck hunters
all in
take
little,
care.
Little boats.
Little, I mean,
you know,
little
not
clothes.
Not yeah, not clothed right.
No, it's 1940. Most of the good stuff is over. Any good stuff is with our soldiers in the war.
Yeah,
in World
no
War II.
Motors.
No.
You
know. Nope.
To be able
seas
to
as high, seas as high as 5 feet high on the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
Ooh. So take that into account. So a little history as we get started. All right, we come back from the break. We'll be talking to Jay Graddick. We'll talk some present day deer hunting and. We don't have temperatures that cold, but we got rain, so that's a good thing. Right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all with us on this Veterans Day edition. You might be hearing it days after, but first airing here, 7 o'clock, Veterans Day 2023. Did just tell the story of the Great Armistice Day storm of 1940. Go Google that if you want to see more details. But that temperature, it dropped so quickly. But the trap for duck hunters is the hunting was so good. Nobody wanted to leave the hunting because it was so good. Ends up 50 duck hunters died that night from that storm.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is something. It is something. We're all, you know, like a good cold front, but just not that much.
Yeah. Jay, the temperature dropped on that story that Sean's talking about from 55 degrees and wind blowing 70 mile an hour, and it went down to wind chill of minus 50-something degrees.
55 below zero. Yeah, they started off that morning on the Mississippi duck hunting at 55 degrees and whatever air wind speed. And then the hurricane force gust and a low of negative 55 wind chill, 1940.
Wow. And they didn't know it was coming.
Nope. They didn't have the forecasting. You know, they're just out there and they, and, you know, the ducks hunting kept getting better and better during the day, right? The front's coming. The ducks are pouring in. They're pushing in from the front. The wind's picked up. Everybody's shooting ducks. Nobody wants to leave. By the time they all decided to leave, the Mississippi River got so rough they couldn't get across it. Yeah, and 50 died.
Dang, that's terrible.
That is terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 1940 happened. All right, let's talk about present day. And a lot to talk about. I know... we're ready to get I'm ready to get a Kansas report and an Alabama report. So let's start off in Kansas first. They chasing? They got to be chasing.
They chasing, they catching, they body slamming. I've been seeing a couple of them fighting.
Yeah, the for those, you know, here in Alabama, we don't exactly get it, except in some parts of the state. But what do you say? I'd say probably 70% of the country right now, the whitetail rut is wide open, right? I mean, it's the majority of the country ruts right now.
It's wide open, Sean, out here right now. It's beautiful weather. It's been hot. It's been real foggy in the mornings, and it's been hot, not nice. But today it broke off pretty. About 2 days ago, started seeing a lot of, I probably saw 15 to 20 bucks that day.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, I mean, like yesterday, Mike, you're familiar with this area out of where I'm at.
Right.
The road from that little town that's to the east, coming over to the wind farm, one of those big pastures to the north side of the road right there. There's nothing in it but grass. Big old buck standing there tending a doe. You couldn't have run him off if you wanted to. I mean, just stand out there in the middle of nowhere, just stand there looking at it.
That's the amazing thing about Kansas. You ride down the road and a big old buck just stand there and say, what's he doing just standing there? Well, you look around, there's a doe over there right down in a little bottom or something, and he's not leaving her.
He's not going to leave her. I tell you, it was like 1:30 in the afternoon. We just got a little something to eat at that cafe down the road and was headed back over here. Look beyond it. I mean, there's a big old boy standing there.
Good yeah.
Food. Now, You've gotten close yet, or just seeing them through? Have you had a close call yet?
Oh yeah. I got I videoed one yesterday at about 20 yards. It was a 9 point. Saw one tremendous deer. It was across the fence, and it was a bad situation. I was actually in a vehicle at the time when I saw it, so it was safe. They got a pass, but I know where it lives, and try to get somebody fortunate enough to get him killed. It's a big deer. It's a bigger deer. It's just as big, if not bigger, than anything I've ever killed or seen in Kansas.
Okay, that got my attention.
That's saying something, because I think the largest that Jay's killed was a 216?
Yeah.
So
wow. Yeah. Okay. Got my attention.
So that's a big one. Yes.
Well, I mean,
and the thing about this deer, Mike, is got a clean rack. He had a real clean, it wasn't a bunch of stickers and kickers. He was a clean, big, big typical.
Man.
I hate to say what he scored, but I got a really good look at him at 46 yards, and he was probably 22 inside. He had extremely long main beams, and his times, probably the first at least two on his main beam on each side, was over a foot long. Very,
man.
Very heavy mass.
Well, I hope you get that one, and you can send me some pictures of him.
Yeah.
They're definitely out there.
They out here. I mean, it's a beautiful day. Everything's going good. Deer moving, so hopefully it'll be a great hunt. You know, which brings up another subject, Mike, altogether. I spoke to you about it briefly, is people hunting in the Midwest or in any state that has known CWD. And just make sure, it doesn't hurt to get your deer tested, because you want to know if it has CWD or not. And then when you do get it tested, you have two different guidelines, I think. You have to check the law to be sure, but you got one that if you just bring a deer back into Alabama, I think it's Alabama law, it has to be deboned, and if you keep it on the skull, you have to boil it like a European mount, basically. Prepare it like a European mount.
Or cut the skull cap out, right?
I'll cut it out.
But it still has to be boiled, I believe, right? Doesn't it have to be boiled?
Yeah, you got to cape it. Yeah, it has to be boiled, I think. But like I said, I'm not a legal expert, but please check with the state and make sure you're not breaking the law by bringing your trophy home and then it turns out bad. I know. Then there's another case where a deer was killed in Kansas, and this is what brought it to my attention. It was killed in Kansas and taken to South Carolina. And evidently, when it was in Kansas, it was tested positive for CWD. The guys were going to get the deer mounted. And the Kansas price was a lot higher than what they could do in South Carolina, so they took the deer back with them. And they didn't think about it or didn't realize what they were doing. But it became a federal case because they transported a known CWD animal across state lines. And so that got a little ugly for them. But anyway, just people need to be mindful and understand that's serious business. You just don't quarter one up, throw it in the box, and bring it home. I know at Skinner's, we're not going to take any. If it's not boned out, we're not going to take it.
You know, I want to add to this, too. I mean, you're talking about a case where a deer's coming from Kansas, or you know, I went through this, killed a deer in Colorado and all that. But it doesn't matter. Mississippi is a CWD. You can't bring the deer in from Mississippi. So, yeah. I mean, you think Kansas and all that stuff, but if you're driving, I mean, if you just can't, the same rules apply if you're coming in from Mississippi or Georgia or Tennessee, you know?
Yeah, I think you got two. I think there's two separate situations. One is Alabama state law won't allow you to bring a deer into Alabama. And I may be wrong. Somebody might look it up and correct me on this. And then the federal part that those guys got in trouble for was the knowing that it was a CWD positive deer and they transported it to another state.
Yeah, and I mean, if, let's just say we were hunting in Mississippi and we killed a buck this afternoon, we would have to do the same thing that we would have to do if we were hunting in Kansas or Illinois or wherever. We would have to debone that deer and cape him out and boil the head or cut the skull off.
A very small skull plate, yeah.
Yeah, very small skull plate, and I believe you might still have to boil it. I'm not positive about that point, but no bones can come into Alabama, even if you just, half a mile into Mississippi from Alabama. Doesn't matter. You can't bring that back legally.
Yeah, so I had
That's
to.
What I understand.
Yeah, the way I had to deal with it is I brought that mule deer back from Colorado. I think the first state to have CWD, Colorado. And I brought back just a skull plate, the very small skull plate, and I had the taxidermist out there cape out the. Which is something new to me. Caping out for us always meant caping out and leaving the head and all that stuff and just taking
That's
the cape.
Right.
But caping out the skin off the nose, eyes, everything gone. You have a bag of hide with no bone in it at all. That's what they let us – that's what we had to have to bring it back into Alabama, no bone.
Right.
And, Jay, you know how to do that. You know how to cape them out. Is that a real hard thing to do, to cape them out around the eyes and the nose and lips?
It's not the one thing I'd recommend to somebody. All you're doing is skinning it, okay? And there's just a couple areas that you got to be careful of. Is around the eye, and what I do with the eye is I stick my finger in the eye from the outside and pull that membrane away from that skull. And then on the inside, you got your knife and you're working around that. You don't want to slice that eye socket on the deer. Hard for taxidermists to fix that, from what I understand. But it's really not hard at all. I'm sure there's some YouTube things out there that'll get you started. Another thing I would
recommend, suggestion.
If you haven't done it before, don't use a really, really sharp knife. It's got to be somewhat sharp, but you don't want it super sharp because you're just going to cut right through and buttonhole that hide in a couple of places, and that's not going to be good. So I know this sounds crazy, but just you don't want a super sharp knife.
Yeah, well, I can understand that.
Once you understand it, then do it. Yeah.
So if you were going to cape one out, just the head part, not the body and everything, but just the eyes, ears, nose, and all that, how much extra time does that take you to do that?
Well, if you've never done it before, it's probably going to take you 30 minutes, okay? But I've done it, and I can do it in 10.
Okay.
I can do it in 10 minutes, yeah. What you do is you just cut a V from the very back of the forehead, take from the back of the base of each horn on top of the head, just cut you a V back there about three inches long, okay?
Right.
And then flip that forward and start skinning it. And then go around the base of the horns real up tight, underneath the skin. Go around the base of the horns. And that hole, you can't leave a bunch of neck now because you can't get the hide over all that neck. So you need to take the neck out at that first joint behind the skull. And I get rid of all that meat out of there and that bone right there. And that way that little V that you cut there and that little line on the top of the hide, it'll come down over that whole sculpted head.
Okay.
And then just start working it down and just start skinning it. Like I said, it takes me maybe 10 minutes, maybe 15 max. If you've never done it before, it might take you 30 minutes.
All right. Let's do this. We're going to run to the break and come back more with Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing. We'll talk about the report there at Skinner's as we're getting into got youth season right now, of course, and then you've got us big youths starting up the rifle season next week and what's he seen during bow season and all that. We'll come right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and our friend Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing. I tell you the kind of funny thing is, too, that, you know, Thursday, so the state kept, they continued with the burn ban. Governor Ivey continued with the burn ban, and Alabama Forestry, I mean, I get emails from them, and I got emails from DCNR. Burn ban continues. That may change, though, because, I mean, keep looking at the look at the forecast. Not a ton of rain each day, but like the next 7 days.
Good chance of rain
every
day.
Next 7 days, rain.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I'm finally timed it out right. Got the patches put in. Hopefully this rain keeps on coming.
Me too.
And, get past that. Continue our conversation with Jay Graddick, Skinner's Wild Game Processing. He chases those deer in Kansas. But he also chases them here in Alabama. What are you hearing back here? How's the season been so far for the archers? And I guess we got youth season starting today.
I haven't heard a lot, but I know youth season is wide open up there at Skinner this afternoon. I'm sure we'll have a bunch of happy young folks coming in with their deer. And we always look forward this time of the year. There's nothing funner than to have all those young people and a lot of them get their first deer. Some of them, man, they done stacked them up. I mean, some of them pretty good. They done, there's one kid in there that been coming in. I know he's killed 8 or 10 bucks over the years. But it's a good time. It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun. So anything up in your neck of the woods, bow hunt reports, anybody killed any good ones with a bow?
No. Bow season's kind of slack. I mean, most of the people around here just don't bow hunt like they did, you know, Mike, back in the 80s and 90s and whatnot. They just not much of a demand for it up there right now. I mean, there's some people that do, but I hadn't heard anything. They don't bring us deer. We're not open that time of the year.
You know, and I haven't heard of really much going on the bow season either. I mean, people like me and you, we're trying to get things ready for deer season. You know, we're on the tractor or cutting roads out or fixing tree stands or whatever it is, and it's just not much time to get out and bow hunt. At least that's been my situation.
Yeah, hey, mine, I hadn't touched it in three years.
And you used to do it all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you were a big bow hunter, so
yep.
There may be something to that, Jay.
Yeah, people, you know, it costs money to go to the camp and spend all that time. And people would rather, you know, our hunting season's so long now, getting into February. I think people would rather invest in the gun season.
Yeah, and you
maybe,
can.
I don't know.
And a reminder, too, I had a conversation with somebody the other day that said, hey, I want to come out and hunt with you and bow hunt. And I said, well, gun season's starting. He said, I can still hunt with a bow, can't I? I said, yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can. There's no rule. You can absolutely please come hunt with a bow. So, yeah, if you want to do it, for me, I'm the same as y'all. I mean, I didn't get planted until this last week and all the other things going on. And the weather's not – we had a couple little cool pops, but that was it.
That's right.
Cool. You know, I'm waiting. I get more motivated when it's not 80.
Yeah.
So, you know, I may still pick up the bow this year. I just hadn't yet.
Yeah. Well, hopefully weather's going to get a little better. Of course, all this rain's coming in. I don't think there's any big cold front coming.
No, no Armistice Day of 1940.
Nope. We can tell that for sure just from our phone. So what's the weather out in Kansas right now, Jay?
It's been hot. It's been like in the 70s and low around in the 50s. But today it's supposed to drop down into the 30s tonight and the high, I think, around 50 for the next 5 or 6 days.
Man.
If I could say, that's about perfect time.
Yeah, that is perfect. If the wind's not blowing 50 miles an hour, that's the problem in Kansas. You get the weather, the temperature's all just right, and boy, that wind can blow 30, 40 miles an hour, and that can be pretty miserable in a tree.
You dang right it can. You don't want to pick the wrong tree up on a hillside, that's for sure.
Yeah.
At the forecast, I think the most wind I saw was around 15 miles an hour, somewhere in there. So I think we're going to be great. I mean, the people hunting out here are going to have a good time, and hopefully some of these people I got will have a good time too.
I know that you've told me in the past that you like between like the 10th and the 15th or somewhere around in there. Isn't that right for the peak of the rut?
Absolutely, Mike. I just know myself around the 12th is the for some reason I've probably shot half of my deer in Kansas with a bow on the 12th, and I don't know if that's just luck or just the way the, you know, things fell, but from now on, we see, you know, you see bucks moving right now. I think it's just going to get more and more, and then they're going to lock down, and then there's going to be some that's moving from doe to doe kind of thing.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the perfect time, 10th through the 15th, 18th, somewhere in there.
You know, I was up there, I don't know, about a month ago, I guess, now, and of course, I didn't draw a tag this year, and I hate it. I'm still crying about it. Me or my grandson, either one drew a tag. But, you know, that time of year, I was up there in September and October, I'm sorry. I didn't see many deer. It's a whole different world up there right now than it was back in October, I can tell you. Riding around, of course, I was all excited. I was expecting to see a lot of deer like I do in November when I go up there. But, man, I rode around, didn't see many. As a matter of fact, I didn't see, I guess, even a shooter buck. Normally, every day I ride around, I see a one or two that I would shoot just about. So it's a big difference between October and November up there. The other thing, too, was that there was so much food in all the fields between soybeans, sorghum, and corn, you couldn't see the game. The deer were in there.
That may be one of your differences too.
Well, yeah, for sure. I'm sure that's a big difference. So now I'm sure they were cutting corn when I was up there a month or so ago. So I'm sure that a lot of the corn's cut and probably the soybeans too, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a lot of beans still standing. They're saying that the moisture content's not high enough to harvest right now. So they got to a point where they stopped harvesting the beans. So there is a lot of beans standing. Of course, you see deer in the beans.
That's right, with the leaves gone.
There's a little corn standing here and there. One of the farms that they allow me access on, he harvested maybe 20% of one field and the rest of it standing. I don't know. I didn't ask him exactly why. You know, the difference in the October and November in Kansas, I've been lucky enough to, I worked out here two years recently, and then I've been out here probably three other times where I had a lot of time, and I was out here towards the end of October and all of November kind of thing, looking around, and it's just a big, big difference. I mean, like in muzzleloader season, you can pattern deer in muzzleloader season, and if you've got big bucks in your soybeans, he's gonna be there every day.
That's right.
You can set your watch to it. Some of those muzzleloader guys do very, very good on big deer.
When's muzzleloader season out there?
Early September, like middle of September.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
it comes before. I mean, just people get confused. It comes before. It's because of the rut for people. We've had these long conversations about states with big bucks don't hunt with rifles during the rut.
Right.
Because people hear you and go, well, it'd go like here, it'd go bow, then muzzleloader. But there it's muzzleloader in September.
Bow hunting and muzzleloader, I think, open up at the same time out there.
But is muzzleloader open now?
It's closed, right,
during the peak of the
muzzleloader,
rut.
Muzzleloader, I think, a couple of weeks, I think it's open in September.
And then it closes down. Archery continues.
Like 10 days, I think it catches like two weekends or something, muzzleloader season does.
Yeah, and then you got bow season the rest of the time until the end of November. I think it opens the 28th or 29th of November, and it goes for, 10 or 12 days?
What does?
Gun season, I'm sorry.
Gun season, yeah.
Because I'm fixing to ask y'all a question about that. Because that's not available to out-of-staters, right? Or is it?
Oh, yes.
Rifle season?
Yes, it is. It's available for non-residents. Yeah, but the problem is getting a tag, Sean. That's the problem. The bow tag is easier to get than the muzzleloader. And the muzzleloader is easier to get than the rifle tag.
Right.
So a lot of people from out of town try to get a bow tag because at least you can hunt. And you can hunt during the rut.
The peak of the rut on that November 12th that Jay just told us about.
Right.
So I would ask you this question, because as y'all talk in Kansas, I'm getting ready for my yearly trip to Pennsylvania. And you know, we go for what is, they call it buck season up there. It's a rifle. You can kill does with a tag, but it's the rifle opener. And it'll happen the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So I think it's the 25th this year. Be up there. We've been lucky the last few years that we get, because there's so many does up there, and the ratios, we get a secondary rut.
Yeah.
Because there's enough does there on our farms and all that. Exactly. that they go back in chasing. Usually it's right there. You know, it's starting kind of when we're there, and it's we've even talked about delaying the trip some. There's only, I think, 10, 11 days of rifle season, but we're talking about doing the end of it because the rut's picking back up. Do you see that in Kansas, that does don't get bred and there's a secondary rut out there, or what do you see, Jay?
Yeah, the matter of fact, the first year I hunted Kansas, my first buck killed out here, I killed it in December, like around the December the 18th or 20th or somewhere in there, and it was tending a doe. It had a small young doe and just stood up in a CRP field, and I just got lucky enough. They walked down the fence line and came to me, and I was able to get him. But that deer definitely was tending that doe. So yeah, I guess you do have it. I haven't been out here that much late season, but it was on that day. I know that.
Just wondered. I mean, thinking about it, it's like, well, this happens up in Pennsylvania. I see it. So I wondered if it happened places like Kansas or Illinois or Iowa, or those places. The buck doe ratio out there, just, I know every area is site specific, but generally, what is it in Kansas? What do you see?
I would guess it's around maybe 3-1.
That's what I would guess.
I mean, you can, when the deer are really on their feet, it's nothing for me to see way more bucks than does. Because they're walking around and more visible. But many days I've seen more bucks than does. So, but to be on the side of caution, I'd say like 3-1, maybe 2 or 3-1.
That's how you get one of those.
It's not lopsided like Alabama.
That's how you get those ruts that do that. So speaking of which, we're going to let you get back after it because I really want to see a picture of a deer that's bigger than any deer you've killed before. So I'll let you get back in the stand, and we'll talk to you when you get back home to Alabama.
All right, guys. You have a good
one. Thank you, Jay. Have a good trip, buddy.
There he goes, Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing, and we're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad you're along. Big thank you to Jay Graddick from Skinner's Wild Game Processing with a Kansas report. And get him back home, get some Alabama report, too.
Yeah. We'll find out what everybody in with Central Florida State's killing.
Yeah.
With the skinning place.
What are you hearing from the black belt up there? No good bow kills?
None that I know of. A friend of mine shot one and thought he made a good shot and killed it, and it was going to be a real good one, like a 160 class, a really good buck. And a week later, I saw him back at the feeder again.
Well, obviously, not too good of a shot there.
Yeah. I guess it hit a bone.
Okay.
Shoulder bone or whatever.
They're amazing what they could take and just keep going.
Yeah, it is. And anyway, he's still roaming around. So the good thing is that they didn't mess him up and they didn't find him at least he's still alive.
So yeah, something we – and I don't get ahead of my skis here on this, but hopefully in the next few weeks we're going to have a guest on the show. I've been messaging with him. Head of the Alabama Bloodhound, the Blood Trackers Association, dogs that find deer, so get him on. And then you and I started a conversation when you and I were talking about getting that guy on. You said, well, Sean, just get a drone. Now, you know I like drones, so what do you tell?
Drone technology now.
Well, I'm into the drones. I've used them, but I didn't think about.
They got infrared cameras on them, so, you know, you run them up. And then you can use your camera to zoom or to look around, and then you know you see a deer laying there, still got heat, so it's showing the heat from the deer, and the deer's just laying there. There's your deer.
Go find that deer.
I mean, you can cover a lot of territory with a drone, especially on that camera. It's going to show heat.
Yeah.
Real good.
So find out where to get it. So I got a camera on my. I don't have any infrared camera on there.
How expensive those are. I have no idea.
You think this is going to be the new guy with a dog? You know, because everyone wants a guy with a dog to go find a deer that gets away, that falls dead somewhere they can't find. But now you're going to be saying, it's not the guy with the dog, it's the guy with the drone and the infrared camera.
You know, in some places, Sean, you can't use a dog to try to
I know some states, yeah.
Some states won't allow you to. Now, I don't know the rules and regulations on drones.
You know, it's going to be like, I bet you this, it's going to be like most things that happen, technology outpaces the laws or government, and usually, like,
yeah.
It'll go on for a little bit, and then there'll be a – I mean, if people would use them to recover shot game, that's a good thing. That saves meat, saves the, you know, saves the animal for the hunter. You just worry would people abuse it. But the people who are going to abuse it are probably already doing it anyway.
I mean, they can abuse anything, Sean. I mean, you got all these night vision cameras and stuff that if you want to abuse something, you can do it pretty easy. You know, night vision cameras go around to fields at night, you know.
Yeah, and they can do it for hogs and coyotes and all that.
So, I mean, there's all kind of ways to do it. Just hopefully, you know, enough good people to have that kind of technology that doesn't do that.
Okay. I tell you what, I'm going to get the dog guy.
That would be very interesting.
Because I like dogs. And then if we can find a drone and infrared person, if you're one of those people listening right now, let us know. We'll get you on the show.
Know how to train them, how to make that dog really good at tracking deer. The other thing I'd love to see is a dog, how do they train a dog to get sheds? That's what I would love to have. I'd love to have a dog that you could put them in the woods and let them go find sheds and bring them back. So, and there's a lot of those.
Yeah, they get a lot of labs to do it. I got a German short hair, and they train a lot of German short hairs to do it as well, because the nose, you just teach that smell early. And and while it's not wired into them, I think my dog Chief, even if I would never been around, would point quail. That's what he does. It's in his, but you can then get them to use that nose to find it. And I think a lot of times they food train them, like, here's the, you find the shed, you put the sheds out there, dog finds a shed, it gets a treat.
Yeah.
Gets a treat. Now it starts associating, if I can go pick up that thing that smells like that, I get a treat.
Yes.
And you know, because it's not as wired into them maybe as, you know, finding a quail. Which, by the way, let me point out too, because I am the person that brings all the other seasons into the mix, quail season's open, so.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And you do have a few quail out there. Dove. You don't have any doves.
You got 40 now, Mike.
40 doves?
Yeah.
When are we going to go shoot them?
I don't know.
Let's get them back down to 12 again.
That's right. Yeah.
So or seven.
Now, they were 40 the other day, which means we'll be down to 4. They'll all leave and go somewhere else. I've yet to shoot them. So that's usually what happens is about time deer season gets here. If you want a deer hunt, that's when, which I still don't have many doves, we'll show up.
You know, well, right sure.
Yeah.
You know, normally in the January is when I see a big boost of doves coming in.
Yep. Well, tough thing about hunting with me is I tell everybody ahead of time, I'm going quail hunt.
Yeah.
So if I quail hunt in January, I'm still going quail hunt in January.
That's right.
So,
doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So are you fired up about deer season? Are you ready? Are you excited about it?
I tell you what. What I'm excited about is what we started the show off with, rain.
Yeah.
Getting feel that part so I can finally put that behind me. Yeah, I'm excited a little bit. I've got got folks who want to get out and hunt, and I want to get out there and chase a few, so yeah.
And that's the same way with me. I guess, Sean, I've done a lot of deer hunting in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and
you've got some great deer on the wall.
In Alabama, there are some good deer, but you got to be around where the good deer are.
Yeah.
And I'm not anymore. Used to be,
because
everywhere I'm hunting right now, there used to be a soybean field and used to be big bucks, and it's not anymore. It's pine plantations. So I don't get fired up over deer hunting like I used to.
But when you hear Jay tell you about a deer that's in the 200s.
Now, what gets me excited is going out to Kansas.
Yeah.
Now, that got my excitement back, seeing what I've seen out there and missing a couple of big ones out there. That's got me back excited again. So that, you know, and I'm going next week up there, and I don't have a tag.
Just to torture yourself.
Just to torture myself. But let me tell you, I'll come back with some fine stories about seeing some big bucks, I guarantee you.
And scout me some ducks while you're there, too.
And there's plenty of ducks out there.
That's a good thing. I got a couple of deer I'm excited about. So, we'll see.
I don't have any. But it excites me to take the kids, you know, my grandson and his buddies, and most of them have killed their first deer or second deer, third deer, you know, ever up there where I'm hunting at. So it excites me for them. But as far as myself, I'm just going through the motions right now.
Well, there you go. Do this. You got your kids out this weekend for youth season or whenever. You or them, get those pictures into our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. There's two pages. There's the FM Talk one and the one FM Talk Outdoors. Drop those pictures in there. We'd love to see them. We'll do it all again next week as we get, we're just a week away from the start of big kids gun season. And once again, on this Veterans Day, thank you to all our veterans out there.
Absolutely.
We appreciate y'all. So we can sit and whine about tree stands and seed and all that stuff and realize we have a great life because of y'all.
That's right.
All right. Do it again next week. Bye.